This past week, the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York launched its first ever major retrospective of the photographs of Deanne Arbus. Arbus died at the age of 48 in 1971. She lived by a maxim which she'd underlined in her copy of the works of Plato. A thing is not seen because it is visible. It is visible because it is seen. Here's how the artist Mary Frank remembers her friend.
I always think of her as being rather close. She was, you know, delicately built, and I remember very much her hands, quite small, and they conveyed a lot. Often when she was talking, she put her hand up, not as high as her face, and with her second finger, but never straight. It was always curved. She didn't move it, she just held it. It was so specific.
Arbus was known for an oblique, some would say macabre, approach to beauty. Sometimes her subjects were abnormal, dwarves or giants. Other times they were outsiders, nudists, female impersonators, or professional exhibitionists. They were at once distant and utterly, undeniably human. The 200 photographs at the Met's retrospective are stunning, but there's more. Aptly titled Revelations, Deanne Arbus, the exhibit includes her notebooks, letters, and her small, obsessive handwriting on postcards. Arbus has become iconic. The exhibit gives her new depth and dimensions, and in that spirit, we sought out those who personally knew her or worked with her, like Robert Benton, formerly art director at Esquire magazine. In 1959, he gave Arbus one of her first important magazine assignments.
I met Deanne when she came with a group of photographs that she'd taken called The Vertical Journey, and it was a series of contrasts between the very high life in New York and the very low life in New York. And I had known her work as a fashion photographer, but I had never seen anything like these. They were radically different from anything I'd ever seen, and so simple, but they have an extraordinary amount of authority.
As a career fashion photographer and the daughter of a wealthy Manhattan furrier, Deanne Arbus knew how to frame the obviously beautiful. But when she left the fashion photography business she'd begun with her husband, Alan Arbus, it was only a matter of weeks before she changed radically, freeing an inner vision. She began to catch people in the antithesis of a pretty posture. She photographed nobodies, changed bodies, extraordinary bodies, people who literally performed as freaks. She saw them as aristocrats because freaks were born into their condition. As she said, I want to photograph everybody. Robert Benton.
As I knew her, she was beginning to find her own voice. I think that's the most exciting time to ever see an artist, when that voice that you later think of as their signature, is they're just struggling with it. There's a kind of energy and a kind of excitement and a kind of daring in their work when they don't quite know where they're going, but they're going to get there.
She conveyed that energy in a letter she wrote to her older daughter, Dune, read here by NPR senior correspondent Susan Stamberg, a fellow New Yorker.
I am fine, but still too excited and waking up at 5 a.m. again and again. I have a new assignment and several more pending ones for a new magazine called Show. The one I'm working on first is about horror in films, theater, TV, waxworks, spook houses, any kind of entertainment. And although at first I was somewhat cool to the idea, maybe that was because I didn't think of it myself, it has begun to grab me.
At that time, Deanne Arbus already knew the painter and sculptor Mary Frank. They matured in the New York art scene together, had their babies within days of each other, felt they were pressing into new territory. Street photography wasn't something proper women did, and much of New York was different then, with fascinating subcultures. And Arbus, says Mary Frank, was an insatiable explorer.
She took me to, what was it called? It was the Bathhouse on 2nd Avenue and 2nd Street, which was mainly for Russian Jews who had immigrated. And there was one Ladies' Day, I believe, Wednesday. All the rest of the time was for men. And there were all these women, everybody was naked, in these rooms that were white-tiled with a little bit of design tile going around at a certain height. And I thought somehow I was in St. Petersburg in 1880. And she wanted very much to photograph there because the women looked amazing. They had really small butts, even though they were big women and large-breasted. And then I think one day we figured out that they had probably worn the corsets from the time of the 30s, which were to make the hips and your butt very small. So they really, the bodies were amazing.
There's a
but
whole...
she couldn't, I'm sorry, she couldn't photograph because of the steam.
The
steam everywhere, so she was very frustrated about it.
So if you didn't want to be photographed by Dionne Arbus, that was maybe one of the places you could go to hide. Then, of course, there was the thrillingly seedy world of Times Square and 42nd Street, Hubert's Museum and Sideshow, and its flea circus.
We must have watched through magnifying glasses, and there were these fleas dressed. They were dressed, and two of them were pulling a tiny, tiny cart with wheels that had two fleas sitting in it. And I remember I was just really totally silent because I couldn't believe what I was seeing, but I was seeing it. And she, I think she had a pride in knowing those people and that they welcomed her, the sword swallower, all the different people.
All those different people, like the albino sword swallower, were photo subjects with whom Arbus had personal relationships. She followed people home, asked them about themselves. Sometimes she visited her subjects for years. She always took notes, wrote plaintively, movingly, and eloquently. And in her letters, she did question her attraction to outsiders and freaks.
I am not ghoulish, am I? I absolutely hate to have a bad conscience. I think it is lewd. There was a lady stretched out on the ground, fallen, I think, yesterday, weeping and saying to the cops, "Please help me," with one shoe off and covered with a blanket, waiting for an ambulance. Is everyone ghoulish? It wouldn't have been better to turn away, would it?
Suzanne Trazoff came to New York as a young woman from the Midwest. She'd applied for a job as a nanny for Arbus's younger daughter, Amy, then 9. The Wisconsin-born Trazoff felt she'd entered a new world.
I was going to this kind of forbidden territory, and I came through the little passageway between the two buildings and into the garden, and I remember exactly, I wore a black watch plaid shirtwaist dress with a pleated skirt. And Deanne had on, I don't remember, it was like a plastic skirt. It was made out of some funny, shiny material. And she had made chili for us that we ate in tin bowls with Chinese soup spoons. I was just in awe. I was just, I loved it. And I was afraid, but she loved New York so much. And she had such a passion for the city that she made me want to go to all these places. She made me not afraid of it.
To the outside world, in the decades since her suicide, Arbus's reputation has conflated the image taker with those images she took, gathered, pinned to the screen around her bed. Arbus, in the mythology surrounding her death, became construed or misconstrued as dark or chilly or neurotic. But Trazoff, who got married in Arbus's small house, remembers her as a warm and inviting woman whose home was open every weekend for guests.
The downstairs of the carriage house was all one room, and the kitchen was kind of separated from the rest of the room by white gauzy curtains that sort of billowed and when the door was open. And we used to have Sunday morning breakfast there, and people would come. When Dune was living back in New York, she would come, and if she had a boyfriend, he would come, and friends of Deanne's would come sometimes, and Alan came, and the breakfast would last for hours, and we would talk about everything, and it was a very fabulous time.
Novelist and writer Larry Schoenberg was another intimate, though he came along later in Deanne's life. Together with her lover, Marvin Israel, they'd review the day at the famous downtown bar, Max's Kansas City.
While she's there, her eyes are roaming all the time at different people that are coming by, and suddenly, you know, she'll just excuse herself from the table and go after somebody and make some kind of connection for a photograph and come back and go on with the conversation.
Yet all the signs of major depression were there, and it's painful to read them now in Deanne Arbus's writings, as in this 1968 letter to a friend, again read by Susan Stamberg.
I go up and down a lot. Maybe I've always been like that. Partly what happens, though, is I get filled with energy and joy, and I begin lots of things or think about what I want to do, and I get all breathless with excitement. And then quite suddenly, either through tiredness or disappointment or something more mysterious, the energy vanishes, leaving me harassed, swamped, frightened by the very things I thought I was so eager for. I'm sure this is quite classic.
Again, Larry Shainberg.
She was never far from her depression during the time I knew her. I mean, she was fragile psychologically, but so were was most everybody we knew, you know? Her suicide put us all into shock. In retrospect, it traumatized the whole community. But I did not think of her, certainly when I knew her, as a person of darkness. You know, I thought of her as a person of great openness and innocence.
Mary Frank recalls the last photo project on which Deanne Arbus worked, photographing people in New Jersey at a home for the mentally retarded.
The last time I saw her, she showed me the pictures of the retarded people, and I was very stunned by them. I found them very, very beautiful. And these people, you couldn't tell quite where their body was in these large white sort of robes, clothes they were wearing. Some of them were, I think, at Halloween, and I remember seeing them in my mind on the horizon, sort of dancing, holding hands, some of them like children, and some had masks. And I remember exactly thinking, where can she go from here?
Where she went, of course, is into the realm of legend, remembered as one of the greatest artists of the latter half of the 20th century. The photographs speak eloquently for Arbus's ideas. Now, with the addition of her notebooks and journals, she's more complete as a person. 2 months before she died, she wrote this for a magazine.
Once I dreamed I was on a gorgeous ocean liner, all pale, gilded, Cupid encrusted, rococo as a wedding cake. There was smoke in the air, people were drinking and gambling. I knew the ship was on fire, and we were sinking slowly. They knew it too, but they were very gay, dancing and singing and kissing, a little delirious. There was no hope. I was terribly elated. I could photograph anything I wanted to.
And so she did. Deanne Arbus, Revelations, is on view at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York through May 30th. Our profile of Deanne Arbus was produced by Tina Tennyson.